CPR 2 and 2, comm check.
CPS, go. Inco, go. PUS, go. Surgeon, go. Booster, go. Copy that, we have a go from you guys.
This is Talking Sound.
Two wrongs make a right. Then this is a fair fight. I thought I did what I could. But it wasn't enough.
The music you are hearing is by the band Crank Up the Silence out of the Houston, Texas area. The song is Can't Take That Away.
You can't take that away from me. You can't take that away from me.
Welcome to the program, members of the band Lake, Johandi, and Steven. Guys, how are y'all doing today?
Doing pretty good. Doing pretty good, Chris. How are you doing?
Doing all right, all things considering. You know, life could be worse in the time of COVID. I've got a couple of gigs out of things right now. So, hey, you know, whenever you can focus on the good in these times, I'm all about that. And
exactly.
I have been thoroughly enjoying this track since Johandi sent it to me a few days ago. Let's kind of start getting, number one, let's introduce ourselves. I guess, Leif, if we can start off with you and move on to Johandi, then to Steven. Tell everybody what you do in the band.
Absolutely. So my name is Leif. Leif is a Norwegian name. So I am a Norwegian living in Texas now. Been here for 5 years. I think there's a couple of other Leifs here in the U.S. as well. We have Leif Erickson, and I apparently there's supposed to be a Leif Garrett as well.
Yes.
I think those are the two I know about. So for the band, I write the music, and I am the lead singer, and I also play the guitar.
All righty. Johandi, how about you?
Hey, man. Long time no see.
Absolutely.
Missing those gigs, man.
I know.
All right. So my name is Johandi Urina, originally from the Dominican Republic, and I am the drummer in the band and newest member too.
And finally we have Steven. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, hey, my name is Steven Ruth. Most people call me Steve. I am the bass player, and I am not from a faraway place. I'm a good old American guy.
There you have it. And what I love about y'all is that despite the rainbow of countries that the band comes from, your sound is absolutely unified. I love nothing more than hearing bands that are tight. And man, you guys, there's really no other way to explain the track Can't Take That Away. Let's kind of start breaking down a little bit how you guys came together as the band that you are now, and what led to the creation of this track.
Absolutely. I can start off with that one. So I've been a musician in Norway for quite a few years. And when I moved over here to the U.S., I started looking for guys to play with, and played in a couple of bands, had a couple of initiatives that didn't go anywhere, and finally met Steve as we needed a new bass player for a cover band that we were playing and gigging with. And so Steve, such a fantastic bass player and such a great guy to work with, which is a big deal. You know, if you play in a band, you know, we spend a lot of time together, and if you don't like the people that you're working with, that's going to be tough. So I met Steve, and his attitude towards playing and his attitude to how easy it is to work with has been just fantastic. And we played for quite a few years with a cover band, and then after a trip actually to LA, we went to LA for me and the other guitar player, Ewan Mackay. We went to LA for NAMM, and after hanging out with the Fender Guitars development team one night and having a good time with them, and discussing music and having just a blast. And it's been a long time dream for me since I was a kid to go to Norman. And I kind of saw that, you know what, we got to get into the original music kind of scene. That's what we have to do, because, you know, we, for cover music, it's fun and great and fantastic and all that, and it pays decent, but it has a cap. It will always be somebody else's music that you're playing. And that's how we kind of started doing original music. And a good friend of ours, Alex Rodriguez, another great bass player, introduced me to Yuhandi and said, hey, you got to talk to Yuhandi. He is the drummer you need. We met up with Yuhandi, and I don't know, Yuhandi, if you want to take it from there, you know, you can tell that side of the story.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was cool because I always told Alex that, you know, I found that it was probably at the beginning of the year, 2020, or at the end of 2019, that I told Alex, look, I'm ready to start a project with original music. I'm also like kind of not done with the covers, but I really want to start creating.
Well, yeah, because I've known you for years, Yuhandi, and I know you. And whenever people tell me like they're looking for a session drummer, you're the first person that springs to mind.
Thanks, man. I appreciate
because,
it.
Well, yeah, and I mean, that's because that's what you do, you know? So to hear you stretching your legs out with some original music, I'm loving.
Yeah, man, I was craving, like, you know, ever since I started playing music back in the Dominican Republic, I've been doing original stuff, I mean, for the most part. So I come here to Houston, obviously, with, you know, an idea of, okay, I'm getting my degree and obviously making a living on music. I had to do the cover stuff, but it got to that point where it's like, now I need to find the right people. Yeah. Like, how do I get to where I want to go? Not only play the music I want to play, but also find a group of people that are pretty much on the same page when it comes to ideology of, you know, the way you see life and, you know, all that stuff. And build that chemistry. And yeah, I had a meeting with Leif. We went to a great Indian restaurant, I remember. And it was like almost, what, 2 or 3 hours later, we were still chatting. It was like, yeah, definitely. There's a great connection here, and we have the same vision. So I jumped in without even asking.
And what about you, Stephen? How did you come to be a part of the project?
So, like Leif said, we were doing some cover stuff leading up to when Crank Up the Silence finally came together. And, Leif and Ewan took off to L.A. and came back with a completely new attitude about some things. And we just started doing some of the things that we had been talking about doing. Really put some effort into, you know, letting the city know that we needed a drummer. And Yuhandi showed up, and it's just been, you know, a rocket ship ever since. Hey, who can it be now?
Yeah, right. Sorry, I did not have a chance to set my cell phone to stun before we started, gentlemen.
Dude, you're better than Shazam.
I know, right?
Hear that? Instant. I know that tune.
My wife freaks out because I wake up faster to the first two notes of that or money than I do to any. Money was my ringtone for years for all of my clients. And it would just freak her out that I would be in a dead sleep. And you'd hear like, boom, boom, boom. Hey, how you doing? What's going on, buddy? Like, I'd just be up and walking like I was on my third cup of coffee and talking business, and then hang up the phone and just go right back to sleep. She was like, I have no idea how you do that. It's like a muscle response. Like,
It is. Yeah. I used to have, back in the days, I had a timer on my record player. That's when you were doing, you know, vinyl and all that stuff. And I had the B side to Dire Straits' Love Over Gold on to wake up to. And it was like, after waking up to that fabulous music. It was kind of like, yeah, this day is going to be good. Yeah. Nothing can mess this day up.
You know, it's interesting that you say that, because music very, very much has that effect on me. And it's always been something that was a moving force in my life, but I don't think I really gave it its credence or due in that respectful way until much later in life, where I realized, like, sure, I love Tupac, but when I listen to Tupac for long enough, like, I tend to be a little angry. Like, I love Metallica and Pantera as well because of the precision of the music. But when I listen to it for too long, I tend to be influenced by it. And I find myself, as I've gotten older, listening to a lot more classical music, a lot more inert things, mainly for that, because I don't want to be influenced either musically or personally by a lot of music. Now, with that in mind, Leif, how does music affect you? How does writing affect you?
Oh, that's a wonderful question. I think when it comes to, it's two-sided, at least two-sided. One of them being, how does music affect you? I think there's many avenues into music. You know, you put on a song and you have it in the background. That's one thing. That's sure. One thing I barely can do, because music takes my attention. So if I'm trying to do something, my attention will be on the music.
Yeah.
Because I connect that way. It's almost any kind of music. I can't have it on as background, because it's very tough for me not to listen to what's going on. So the effect it has to me, and it's funny that you mentioned classical music, because, you know, when you start off as a young guitarist, you kind of start, guitarists is all you listen to. You know, you look for all these fantastic guitar players, and they influence you in certain ways. But after a while of playing, you understand that they do their thing and they're great at it, and you can pick up a lot of good stuff from other people, but there is something unique about what you do, and that comes from your influences. And those influences, the broader that perspective could be, the more unique could come out of it.
Sure.
So, because I had this thought a couple of years ago, so what if I was a great guitar player and could play all the notes that Steve Vai is playing the exact same way? I would be a copy of Steve Vai.
Yeah, yeah.
And we don't need a copy of that.
Yeah, yeah.
So my approach to music has been kind of really stepping back and say, okay, there's got to be another entry point to music than the influences. The influences, I think, is a great way to form you as a musical being.
Sure.
Because it will kind of give you all these different influences. And I used to work on the stage for the symphony orchestra back home in Stavanger in Norway, where I'm from. So I got exposed to a lot of classical music, and I really loved it. I think it is a beautiful way to connect to music. And then when I started writing, I needed to find a path into writing, because that's how do you go from nothing to something? That's an interesting question.
Yeah.
Because you're basically taking, you're coming from something that doesn't exist and going to put it into something that, you know, manifests. So my way into writing was actually understanding that if you're going to write music, you have to have something to say. That was the only way that I could connect. You know, I've been doing lectures for a big period of my time, presentations and all that. So I'm used to talking to people, and sure. you can't talk to people without having something to say. So for me, that was the path into the musical part of writing. And I had this discussion back home with another good friend of mine, an artist out of Norway called Jeremiah. He's from Dubai, and he lives in Norway now and does his musical career from there. And we had this discussion about songwriting. And I told him that for me, it would be like if I could sit down 12 people in front of me and say, hey, guys, sit down. I've got something that I want to talk to you guys about. then I feel I have something to offer. And that kind of also came out of one of the podcasts that is absolutely worth checking out on the topic. It's called Soda Jerker on songwriting. It's two guys talking to different artists about songwriting, and they had Sting on a couple of months ago. And Sting said something fantastically true about songwriting. He says, there is enough noise out there.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to not contribute to the noise. I'm trying to, if I don't have anything to say, I'm trying to not say anything.
Yep.
Which yep. I think is a beautiful way of looking at things. And if you look at the name would crank up the silence as well, it kind of have those kind of contradictions in it, because we're trying to, it's not that it's that fabulous necessarily. So I'm not going to try to kind of pump this up to be some kind of intellectual masterpiece, you know, but there is an attitude towards yeah. meaning. And I think that's where Yuhandi and I also have a lot of interesting discussions, you know, yeah. because what is meaning and what is purpose and what is worth saying? I think those are kind of topics that are endless. If you want to really explore them, and they're very interesting.
Yeah. Now, what has it been for you guys, Steve and Jahandi, to kind of start interpolating this creative process of Leif and the way that he goes about writing music? How do you guys, I guess, translate that in studio? Because I know, like myself, I'm an electronic artist, and my process is really wild. Like, it's very, very free form. Most people, whenever I've been in the studio with them and we've collaborated, by the end are like, whoa, okay, that felt weird. You know, so what is the process for you guys when it comes time to marry things together with what Leif is bringing to the project?
You want to take this one, Steve? I can take it.
Go for it.
Okay. Can you hear me, guys? Okay.
Sorry, here I am. I'm back. I've had a little trouble. Yeah, Leif, one thing about Leif is that, I mean, the stuff is great. The things that he has to say, you know, the music, you talked about the music being super tight, and that's, you know, we spend a lot of time together. We play a lot together. And we work on it, you know.
It shows. It shows.
Yeah, and Leif always brings really, really, really good songs to the table, and they're great as is. But Leif is so good about just letting us take off with them. So you know what it comes into the room day one as is not how it leaves once we put it on the, you know, the recording studio. It just gives us. And, you know, Jahandi and I are a team. You know, we got the rhythm covered, right? So, like, we know that we have this opportunity to just put this thing beneath this song, and Leif is going to be just pulling it out of us instead of, you know, well, that's not how the song went when I brought it in. Now, it's just a seed. These songs that are coming in as these seeds, and then we get to water them and let them take off.
Yeah.
That's and the other thing that I'll say about Leif, which I think is really interesting, is that having something to say is tough to do when you're not saying it in your native language. And this guy's got a really good touch on English.
Yeah,
listen to the words, and with you know, additional songs that come out, if people start tuning in and checking all of our stuff out, I mean, listen to the words, you'll be pleased and impressed. And that's something that I really like supporting as well.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Because it is a different creative process to write in a tongue that is not your own. Yeah. I mean, even my, granted, at one point in life, I tutored people in Spanish. I also moved to Maine for 6 years of my life. So my Spanish now is like trying to read a menu. That because I had nobody to speak Spanish with for like 6 years. So bye bye conversations. So my ability to write in a foreign language has waned because of that. What has it been like for you, Leif, to number one, not only start writing stuff in not your native tongue, but to literally move to a different culture and absorb that culture in a different way than you observed that culture from a distance?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. I think one of the things that I think is important for writing is first you need to think. So you think first and then you write. And that's how things work. So that main idea that you're forming in your head, that this is worth talking about, this is worth writing about, that's normally a one thing. It could be a line, it could be a phrase, it could be a word, it could be an emotion, it could be something that kind of catches your attention, saying that, first of all, this has not been over saturated with so much stuff being said about it already. So that's the first place to start. When it comes to the language part, you know, Norway teaches English from first grade. So sure. We're being exposed to all the American culture, all the movies, all, you know, so there's a lot of exposure to the language. But it's a different thing to kind of tap into being able to form some complexity in the writing with metaphors. And when I moved here the first couple of years, it was kind of like there is this, I haven't lived here my whole life. So if somebody cracks a joke about a commercial that was here 10 years ago, I don't have that.
Yeah, you're not exactly jibing on a where's the beef shtick, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, so there, that is still a thing, you know, for me where I have holes to understand those things. But maybe the different approach kind of brings something that can be different as well, you know, since I'm pulling a lot of the Norwegian and European culture into this culture with a very open mind. And I think that's what you have to do. You have to be an open-minded person to be okay with saying that things are different. Things are done differently. Some of it, and the way I see, you know, coming to the US and starting playing music here is that, you know, there truly is opportunity and there's people that are used to looking for solutions and opportunity. And I like that. I think that's a great thing that this country has to offer, amongst a lot of other things. Yeah. And, but the language part is kind of like, I tell the guys, you got to tell me if there's, first of all, this is an important part. First of all, I normally would have to tell people, if I say something that sounds a little funny, please take it in the absolute best possible way.
Yeah.
So if that is one thing that I kind of because you know the thing with having a different language and speaking it on a daily basis is that it sometimes comes across as too direct. That is one thing. That's the first thing that happens because you're only saying what needs to be said.
And yeah, you don't understand the nuance and the inflection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, but now after 5 years and, you know, I've been married to my wife, we've been together for 10 years and she's American. So, you know, I've had enough, arguments to get it, fill in the corners that needed
enough in the trenches, develop. So to speak.
Yeah.
Well, and so, but, you know, like, I just on that same note, I would kind of like to hear from both you and Jahandi, because, I mean, myself, I'm a Cajun American. Like, I'm from Texas. My family's from Louisiana. So I have that cultural kind of tinge to my music and what I'm listening to and how I'm listening to it and even how I play. But what has it been like for you guys coming from two totally different cultures that are both totally different cultures from American and whose music diverges greatly from American? Now, granted, you know, a lot of the Dominican culture and things like that can kind of trace its roots right back to the same Afro roots of music that blues and all that kind of stuff does. But what has it been like for you guys to kind of learn how to play music in a different language?
Yeah. To me, it's super interesting, man. 'Cause like you said, the native, like our original music, I want to say, from the Dominican Republic. It's, you know, we're known for merengue and bachata. Those are the two big ones. And totally different instrumentation. Although, yeah, we have bass and stuff like that. Most of those instruments are also hand percussion that you don't see on any, you know, rock or, you know, country here.
Yeah, you're playing bajo sextos and stuff like that.
Yes. So it's great, man. Like, in as a drummer, being able to understand and speak, like, or have that, I want to say, large of a understanding when it comes to rhythms and sounds and stuff like that, really, really helped me when I came here, because although I started as a metal drummer since day one, I grew up in the Dominican Republic. I was also playing merengue and bachata to make money and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So making the transition here was like, okay, so let's go back to, you know, now we're moving to a country where I'm going to be playing what I started playing when I was young, like, you know, playing the metal and the rock stuff. But then it was a nice experience for me, because when I moved to Houston and I went to school for in the first 2 years or so, I decided to start playing. So I joined this classic rock band, and it was nothing but Led Zeppelin and Steely Dan and John Mellencamp and ZZ Top. And none of these names rang the bell.
Yeah.
For me, none of them. When I auditioned, for these guys,
we aren't going to play any Dio or anything like that. You sure?
Yeah, I'm like, I'm ready. I'm, you know, when I said, yeah, I'm ready to audition, you know, I was ready for them to be like, okay, let's play Sweet Child of Mine. Nope, not at all.
Yeah.
They threw all these weird, you know, Wild Nights by John Mellencamp or Reeling in the Years by Steely Dan. I'm like, I have never, ever in my life listened to that ever before. So to me, it was so awesome, man. It was so awesome for me to sit down and learn 60 plus songs when I got into the band, of all this new music, mostly American from the 60s and 70s. It is so beautiful. It was for me like discovering a brand new world, man. Although I knew my Pantera, my Iron Maiden.
Sure.
It wasn't, you know, I didn't know anything when it came to like rock.
Yeah, you're not exactly playing. States. You're not exactly playing like, you know, Walk every every gig. You know what I mean? Like
exactly. And it makes so much sense. Like when I started learning what it is and what it ain't, whatever, from Led Zeppelin, that song, and Ramble On, I'm like, everything clicked. I'm like, oh, this is where Nirvana and such from the 90s got the rhythm from.
Yeah.
And everything just made sense. And I just fell in love with it again. It was so beautiful.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. Steven, what has it been like for you on the flip side of that, to be playing with two people from such divergent backgrounds that bring different things musically to the table like that? Do we still have Steve?
I'm right here. It's a ton of fun for one thing. I mean, it's like hop on this roller coaster.
Yeah,
it's I mean, what could you possibly complain about? And it's crazy, you know, listening to Johanny talk about learning American music. For me, you know, those things are just running through your veins because you grew up hearing them since you can remember. You know, so yeah, I mean. Maybe I didn't listen to a lot of Steely Dan, but I know it all because it was out there all the time.
Yeah. But you could hum along to it.
Yeah, hum along to all of that stuff. Yeah. So it's cool because, I mean, these guys they're definitely playing from their roots, you know?
Yeah.
But it's all kind of coming into this like central force that's pulling it all together, and it makes it really easy. You know, it all feels very, very natural.
Nice.
Very natural. There's nothing out of whack about anything, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess
just it's like a cocktail.
Yeah. Precisely. Just the right amount of everything.
Everything, yeah.
Makes exactly. The proper drink. Mm-hmm. And with that in mind, Leif, what has it been like for you to, like we were saying, not only immerse yourself in a culture, but have to learn a different kind of music in a different way, kind of like Johandi was saying?
Well, with the musical influences that the U.S. has on the world, you know, we listen to a lot of the same stuff.
Say that A-ha is not from Norway or Norwegian.
Exactly.
They're Norwegian, and they're one of my favorite bands ever.
Exactly. They're our biggest export.
That's right.
Cool sign.
And one of the coolest videos ever.
Yeah, I was watching it the other day, actually, you know, that drawing kind of thing.
Oh, it's still one of the coolest.
It's still one of the coolest videos ever.
Yeah, exactly.
It is. So I think, you know, for me, gravitating to a lot of players from the U.S. already, so the language is pretty, you know, easy to pick up. I think the biggest part of being different, I think, has come through Johandi's drumming. I think he brings something unique to the table that is different. It's different from what I'm used to back home. It's different from what I'm used to here, because he's got this extreme diverse background of being, you know, a island drumming perspective and metal. It doesn't get more diverse.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of like I play the violin and I play in a metal band. You know, it's just so diverse. And every now and then, and he brings it to the table too. And I think we all bring all our influences to the table. But every now and then, you know, we're at the end of a rock song and we're really rocking out, and there is the double pedals coming through from Johandi and completely making the whole thing just electric. It's so much fun. So for me, I don't feel that transition that much, other than the enjoyment of being a part of it. And I've said this many times before, you know, when I stop thinking about the other players in the band and just enjoy the music that we're making together, something magical has happened. And then it sounds like a cliche about it, but it does. You know, there's almost like there are these invisible threads from our minds that join into something else, because we're interconnected in a way that everybody knows what's going on. If somebody takes an initiative to go in the direction, we're all in.
Yeah.
You know, it's a universal language. And the diversity when we then throw you in from Scotland in the mix, he brings his background into that as well, and the diversity of the musicianship is just fantastic, which I think we're bringing into our songs and our recording as well, and that's why it sounds slightly different, and we should be okay with that. I think that's what we should cultivate.
Yeah,
and we are, you know.
Yeah, and you know, with that in mind, one more big question here, and that would be like, how easy does it happen for you guys? Because there's five of you, correct?
Yes, there's five of us.
So we're going to talk about the other two guys now behind their back, okay?
One's a girl.
Yeah, the other two folks. You're right. You're absolutely right. But you know, there's a lot that goes into being a band. There are so many facets to the gem that is the music industry and that is being a band, you know, from talent to rehearsal to showing up to play to gigging. How has it been for you guys, all coming from different places, working together? I know sometimes it can be like one of those, it's the rough, like ZZ Top, for instance. It's the rough moments that come up with their gold, you know? So how has it been for you guys, and what has the process been like as far as creation? Is it a process that y'all enjoy together? When you're done with the process, is it the fact that you enjoy listening to the music? or are you just happy to be done with the process?
I think it's both. I think it's both, you know. I mean, it's fun to get the music ready, and then once it's finally ready, you know, you get to sit back and go, yeah, look at that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just let me say this real quick. Chris, Leif is a songwriting machine. This guy comes into the room. Hey guys, every time. Hey guys, I have two new songs, and I'm like, I'm working on the first two, like five rehearsals ago.
Nice,
and it's awesome, because with all these questions, you can put it all together because Leif comes in with all these ideas already with lyrics, which makes my life way easier because for me it's just, you know, throwing a beat, and then Steve and I have this connection because we're reggae guys, and they're like, yeah, we know exactly what we're going to do.
Yeah, but, you're already in pocket together.
Yeah, and Leif sometimes is like, okay, guys, that's awesome and sounds fun, but no.
Yeah, yeah.
And my point is that we have great communication and respect towards each other. When Leif brings an idea in there, since day one, man, like I felt because of our first conversation, since day one, I came into that room. I can't remember if it was three or five songs. I came into that room, play whatever I felt I had to play, and right away I gave feedback because I felt that comfortable. Because he made me feel that comfortable. Yeah. And then when I met the rest of the guys, I was like, "Yeah, I can just say whatever I want in here, and I know who I'm talking to because this guy will understand." And then when we all started creating at that level and that level of respect and professionalism, it was so easy, man. And like, Leif writes all the songs and he's from Norway, but dude, like we rehearse every Tuesday and we're like, what's next? Such and such. Oh, that's our reggae song. Okay, cool. What's next? Oh, that's such and such. Oh, wait, I have to pull my brushes out because this is like a jazz tune. Then next song, it's like a 60s rock and like, what the hell is going on? We have so many styles to cover.
We're all over the map right now. Yeah, and it's just everything seems like, oh yeah, that's our next song.
Yeah, but see, that's what the creative process is supposed to be. And I guess the reason I asked the question is because I've had a few artists that I've interviewed lately and people that I've known for years who have finally gotten to a point that they enjoy their music. Let's just put it that way. And it was one of those like, man, you know, like you're on album six right now. Like, and it was just the fact of the hustle and bustle of putting an album out, you know, and they just, it was a different mentality that they took. And now they take it as a business mentality instead of just a fun mentality of like, okay, yeah, we had a CD release party. I guess I just have 1,000 CDs now. Like no thought beyond that, you know. And here recently in my trip to Phoenix with my wife, we were driving through the desert and my new album had come out. So I threw my album on and she was like, "You know, you genuinely enjoy listening to your own music, don't you?" And I was like, "Yeah, I do." And she's like, that's strange. Like, I've dated a lot of musicians and I've never met somebody that actively enjoys listening to it. And I gave her the example of most people toil over their music. You know, most people, when they go into the studio, like there's always some kind of headbutting that happens, you know, like, dang it, man. If Johnny just hadn't gotten drunk the night before, he could have nailed that solo. Instead, he just phoned it in, you know, and now it's that way forever because we didn't have the money to go back and redo it. You know, so there's always that like lingering that exists. And I was like, I'm a solo musician. I make music on my terms, and when I'm done, it's done. Like I don't have to answer to anybody, so I can crank out music like crazy. And it sounds like you guys are one of the many examples of a band that works together without necessarily that clash of egos. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that comes from also having some experience.
Sure.
And I think it comes from a maturity level to kind of understand the concept of being a band.
Yeah.
And you have to really care for the people that you're playing with.
Yeah.
There's a lot of mutual respect that needs to be there.
Yep.
Yes, we sometimes have to make decisions also when we don't have a unanimous way of looking at things. That's the nature of things. But you have to really care about the people that you're playing with, because you spent so much time together and you invest so much of your life into this, that unless you care for those people, then it's going to crash and burn. And you can't fake that. And that's why, you know, that whole thing with, and Ewan and I have the same thing, you know, we are two strong guitar players, and that normally is a recipe for disaster. But that's
why some bands have two bassists. One just would not give up.
Exactly. So, but that kind of leads to this, okay, if you have that mutual respect, and also you want the other people in the band, first of all, you want them to shine. You want them to be able to contribute what they have, and because it gets better. And so my view on it is, and back to what Ioane was saying, you know, when we're working on the music, I can't lose out on a good idea coming from someone else.
Yeah.
So that's why my rule has always been, if anyone has a suggestion, let's try it and see how we feel about it, see how it works.
Yeah.
And that way we try everything. And after trying musical ideas, you kind of get a hunch for if this works and this doesn't work. So we never argue about when it comes to should we do it this way or that way. We say, try it. Let's see what happens. And I think that gives that climate of wanting to contribute, and which is so important. And it's not like it's always everybody joining in all the time.
Yeah.
But we hear different things. Steve comes up with a different approach, and what if we did this? What if we dialed back that part? What if we are very focused on the what if? What if we did it this way? How can we do it different? And that pays off.
Yeah.
When it comes to, there's one more thing, just very briefly. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I get very excited about this.
No.
So the fact is that as a musician, you spend at least 95% of your time alone. So unless you really like what you're doing, you're not going to keep doing it.
Yeah.
So those small little events you have when your music is out there, or you're playing concerts, or you're doing live shows, that is such a small amount of what being a musician is about. So you have to love the whole process, and you got to be okay with that. If you don't do that, you're going to burn out and you're going to tap out, and it's going to kill you, because it will take the joy away from you.
That's right.
And that's something that we are trying to kind of make sure now that we're releasing music as well. You can't let why we're doing this end up in the background, because you can get so hung up on the marketing part. You can be so hung up on the different things to do to push it out, radio stations and all that it takes the joy away. But we have to step back and say, we're doing this because we love it. Let's just agree on that. And all the work that needs to go into it, that's a different story. But that's important. You have to enjoy the path, because if you don't, you won't get anywhere.
Absolutely true. Because there is a formula to success. There, like, it exists, you know, and it really is work. Work. That's all it is. It's one of two things, and it's hilarious, because I teach people to brand podcasts and to start podcasts, that kind of stuff. And I explain to them, it's one of two things. It's time or money.
Mm-hmm.
If you have the money, you can absolutely pay a PR and a marketing agent, and you can get out there and make some money now, Jack. You know? If you don't have the money to do that, you're going to have to spend organic time.
Mm-hmm.
And do all that, and you're going to be doing it yourself. So you better enjoy it. You better love it. Like, you better love that kind of stuff. You better love the fact that The formula for success is approximately 1 to 3, and that is 1 hour in the studio equals 3 hours of promotion.
And you kind of have to be okay with and yeah. find some enjoyment in that yes. part of the process.
Exactly.
Too, you know?
Exactly.
Which doesn't necessarily come natural.
No.
Because if you've spent your whole life enjoying music and playing music,
yeah.
and then there is this vehicle for getting your music to where it needs to be. It's in the beginning you kind of try to get out of it. But as you embrace that and say, okay, this yep. is a part of it, which is understandable,
yeah.
you know, that needs to be there. If you want people to listen to your music, you have to give them the opportunity to discover it and to enjoy it and stay connected to it. So it's, and now more than ever, you can do that because social media is so
exactly.
accessible for everyone. And, but that's a big shift, big, big, big shift in the way that I see the music industry to be oh. okay with saying, because there's two sides to it. It's money and time.
And
like
time.
You say.
Exactly.
You think you've scraped all your money together. You go into a studio and you do your music and you're like, oh, it's finally here. And then you're kind of like, yeah, that's just one part of
that's just, yeah, that is just the surface. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Which is why I was saying, you know, a lot of people, once that is done, they're just tired, you know, like they're tired of hearing track 3 and they never mm-hmm. ever want to think about track 3 again. And like, I'm a big Rush head. Rush is one of my favorite bands in the world. And Geddy Lee even says it to this day that like, if I could play Tom Sawyer every night for the rest of my life, because I had to, I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
You know? Like, if it makes that many people happy around the world every night for me to step out on stage and play that one song, okay, mm-hmm. I'll give that mm-hmm. to you. You know? Like, you put me here, why not? So mm-hmm. to hear people like you guys that are still in love with the process and really, really take the process of creation to heart, it does me good to hear that, because I spent years in rock and roll, running sound at clubs and venues and seeing bands get together, form, write an album, you know, perform, and then just go away. So to hear people like you guys that are out there, that have, like you were saying, the experience under their belt, enough to know what it is to be a quote professional musician. You know, and to live the realistic life of a professional musician, and to know that along with the studio time comes a little bit of time maybe out flyering, you know, something like that. It's great. It's very good to hear.
And, you know, I think you need to enjoy the ride, not just the work. You know, we also enjoy the friendship and hanging out together. I think it's the highlight of my week to go to the rehearsal room. And when I go there on my own to work on my gear, which is a completely different story. If we want to talk gear at some point, you know, that is something definitely we should do.
Oh, yeah.
But we love hanging out as well, you know, and we have all these stories that comes up. Steve's got a lot of them. We got to talk about Steve's couch, and we got to talk about Leonardo DiCaprio. If we're, you know, at least put it out there, Steve, you know,
that's
you,
my boy.
You kind of keep,
don't forget about Brad Pitt. Come on.
Yeah. Yes. Brad Pitt as well. You know, maybe since we're kind of teasing this,
everybody's partying on Steve's couch. It sounds like a podcast in and of itself, Steve. Hey, everybody, Steve, welcome to Steve's couch.
That's right.
Everybody, you gotta get the story.
Everybody wants to ride on that couch.
Nothing sounds more rock and roll than that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now this is a couch that
no joke, once belonged to Brian Adams, the songwriter from Canada.
Wow.
Who's got hit after hit after hit. The couch is sitting in my house right now.
Wow. And
it's a beautiful couch. Leif's been on the couch. Yanni's been on the couch. Like, it's this,
I bet it's a fancy supple couch.
Corinthian leather kind of thing. And it's just, oh my gosh.
Now, how did you end up with Brian Adams' couch?
Just dumb luck. We have a really good friend who's also, well, she's from England, but I think she was living in BC and bought a couch. And when she went to pick up the couch, you know, it was a nice neighborhood, and it just turned out to be Brian Adams' house.
Wow.
And his wife was selling the couch, and yada, yada, yada. She needed a place to put it because she was moving somewhere, and we have it now.
All right. Yeah. See, I saw something much more dramatic where it was I lived in this high rise, and I was out having a beer, and Brian Adams' old lady just started throwing his stuff out of the apartment. So I got a couch.
No, it was more like a Craigslist response, I think. Just need a couch. There's
they had the room above us at Frisco, right?
I can't hear you.
You can't hear me?
Uh-oh. I can't hear. No, my wife was trying to correct my details, so I can't hear her. I got my headphones. Speaking of her,
I can hear you.
Yeah.
Well, before we let you guys go, time for shameless self-promotion, as though this hasn't been already. Where can everybody go to hear more from the band Crank Up the Silence? Where can they go to follow you on social media? Where can they go to get TikTok videos of Johandi, all that stuff? I assume you're a TikToker, Johandi. Are you hip with the kids and the TikTok?
Unfortunately not.
No? Okay.
I'm more old school. I'm like against trends. That's
you can
me.
You can find us on MySpace.
Nice.
High five.
Let's give the rundown of the different platforms. I think the first one, obviously, Spotify, Crank Up the Silence. You'll find us on Spotify. You'll find us on Apple Music and iTunes as well. If you search for Crank Up the Silence on YouTube, you can listen to the song there. And on Facebook, it is facebook.com, Crank Up the Silence. And on Instagram, Crank Up the Silence as well. So it should be pretty easy to remember. And if you follow us, then you will know what we're up to. And we're getting ready to play live pretty soon. As soon as we can just get this COVID thing under control, we're eager to get going.
Any hopes of maybe an acoustic live feed or something like that?
We've done quite a few of those.
All right. You
should be able to find those on our Facebook page, right, Leif?
Yes.
If you go to our Facebook profile, which is also at Crank Up the Silence.
Nice.
We did about 10 episodes of just playing some acoustic sets. Just got to let it out. You know, we can't get out there in front of a live audience, so we're having some fun doing that for a little while. So you can go see us do some stuff there. And that's not all of our music, but it's some of our new music.
Great.
So it's definitely worth checking out.
All right. Fantastic. Well, guys, please do hold the line while we close things out real quick. While you're online checking out everything that is the band Crank Up the Silence, make sure to stop on by Talking Sound Podcast, talkingsoundpodcast.com. Also, the sister site, talkingsoundshow.com, is where you can find everything. You can find the Freelance Index, which hopefully one day we'll be able to go out and freelance more, but there are still some companies on there that are hiring freelance AV technicians, so go check it out. Make sure to stop on by and check out podcastcadet.com, our sponsors. If you want to start up a podcast for yourself, friends, family, fun, whatever, podcastcadet.com is for you. Use the code TALKING20 to get 20% off your cart. Enjoy this last part of the amazing song, Can't Take That Away.
You can't take that away from me. You can't take that away.